Hello, everybody. It's Dane Curley, and this is me clicking record. That was just very rude. And you know what? It was also ungentlemanly. And in addition to being rude and ungentlemanly, it was churlish. That's right, it was churlish. Surly. And just only a big oaf would do that in the introduction to his podcast. It was just inconsiderate and uncharitable. That's what that was. And then it's not good if you're doing such things right before you want to talk to your sponsors, right? You can't do those things and then get right into your sponsors, tell you about what drink I'm drinking and all that. Can't do that. And that's why I need your help to join me on Patreon. Patreon! We actually recently have hit a milestone where you can start advertising. And quite frankly, we're probably going to have to. We're going to have to start advertising. And the way that works might be interesting for you to know. You listen to a lot of podcasts. You listen to this podcast and they have sponsors. And you're wondering, well, how the hell do they get paid? Well, they get paid, you know, many of them have Patreons. Patreon.com/Dane Curley is where you can support this one. And if you've joined us since the latest advertising wave, you've been listening for a month now, and maybe it's time to kick up $3. Buy me a latte. And by buy me a latte, I mean keep the lights of this podcast on. I won't actually spend the money on a latte. I do reinvest the money. I swear I do. But how do other podcasts make money? It's called the CPM. It's for every 1,000 listeners that you can, you know, semi-guarantee have heard the advertisement, who are real people and not bots and all that, you can charge X amount of dollars. The lowest amount there is usually about $15, and then it moves up to, you know, maybe $40 is what I would guess that the Joe Rogan podcast could charge, because, you know, he knows, like, his age demo, and he has a very particular kind of product that is gonna make money by getting to those types of people who are listening that they are looking for. So, anywho, I'm just at that part now where I can start charging a CPM and start finding sponsors. And we will start that soon, but the reality is that where we're at this phase of the game, I need your help. I need you to go on Patreon, and it means a lot to me if you could join the other patrons in a small donation of any amount over any time period, and let me know that I should keep the lights on. Thank you. Let's get into the show. Let's get into the show. Let's get into the dance. Let's have a romance. That's what you'd be paying for. More great content such as that. And in fact, I'm bringing back something that we haven't. No, now I'm rapping. Something that we haven't done in a long time. It's one of my old favorite bits here. It's Song of the Day to Check Out. Song of the Day to Check Out. Yes, and I have a good one here that I'm going to be typing in. You'll hear some clickety-clacking going on in the background. And, you know, it's so hard when even just typing the name of this song makes you want to sing it. You're going to know the song. It's, I must be a one-hit wonder. It's from the 80s. It's Don't You Want Me. And then Baby's not in the title, but you gotta say Baby. You wanna say Baby. Bow, bow. So let's get into it. This is really way more fun to listen to without the music and examine the lyrics than you might suspect. There's a whole freaking thing going on. There's a whole man. There's a story arc. There's a man. There's a woman. There's two different vocalists. And let's see how much of a creep this gentleman is. You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you. I picked you out, I shook you up, and turned you around, turned you into someone new. Now 5 years later on, you've got the world at your feet. Success has been so easy for you. But don't forget, it's me who put you where you are now, and I can put you back down too, you motherfucking bitch. Don't you want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see me. Don't you want me? You know I don't believe you when you say that you don't need me. It's much too late to find. When you think you've changed your mind, you'd better change it back or we will both be sorry. Don't you want me, baby? Bow, bow. Don't you want me? Oh! Don't you want me, baby? Bow, bow. Don't you want me? Oh! Then, first of all, fucking fantastic. Really, actually, a very well-written song. Little sketchy on the melody at some point to cram a couple of extra words in. Now, 5 years later on, you've got the world at your feet. Success has been so easy for you. And he's like, "You, this is all because of me. I turned your life around, turned you into someone new. You were just some waitress in a cocktail bar. Now you're who I have created. You are the mecha version of yourself. You are the enhanced, the alchemical gold from the shit that I found in the cocktail bar." As if working in a cocktail bar is all bad. It is not. You can make a fucking lot of money working as a waitress in a cocktail bar, or as a bartender, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we're not judging anybody's life choices, but this guy is. This guy is, and he wants her to remember, "I did this for you. It was me. You're nothing without me. Nothing, nothing." It's a trope, but it's a trope for a reason. It's one of those things that happens in life. And you know, if when love and romance gets involved into that equation, oh boy, you're either going in one of two directions. One, it's all going to work out and this is going to be an amazing story and you're going to love each other. And on the other hand, you might have a Harvey Weinstein kind of thing. You know, and it's very, very different sides of the same coin where you feel this egotistical, wow, it's like an egotistical growth, like you're expanding your ego. It's getting, your head is getting bigger because of the accomplishments of someone else, because you feel that you've set them out in motion. Okay, anyway, now the woman comes in, two sides to every story, two sides to every story. Here she is. "I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar." I don't have a good falsetto. I should just fucking sing it regular. And pretend I'm a woman, okay? Be modern. It's a fucking brand new day, okay? Brand new day. This is what she sounds like. "I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar. That much is true. But even then, I knew I'd find a much better place, either with or without you. The 5 years we have had have been such good at times. I still love you. But now I think it's time I live my life on my own. I guess it's just what I must do. Don't you want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see me. Don't you want me? You know I don't believe you when you say that you don't need me. It's much too late to find. When you think you've changed your mind, you'd better change it back or we will both be sorry. Don't you want me, baby? Mm-hmm. Don't you want me? Oh! Don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me? Oh, it's like becomes a desperate thing. It's in my imagination. Doesn't actually change the delivery in the song. But you see how her verse was so much less angry? That's the real beauty of this fucking song. It's her maturity that makes this song so much better than what you think it is if you're not listening to the lyrics. Her maturity of this character. Look, I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar. You're right. But you know, like, I knew that I wasn't going to live in that cocktail bar forever. That wasn't going to be my permanent home for my career. I had other plans, whether they were with you or without you. You know, it was inconsequential to me. I'm glad that we had great times together. In these 5 years we've been together, she's even giving you the context, how long they were together. He says, you know, 5 years later on, you've got the world at your feet, as if it's all his fault. Now, the way she contextualized it is more like, we've had great times over the course of these 5 years, rather than him only talking about the end point, right? And she's saying, "I still love you, but now I think it's time I live my life on my own. It's just what I have to do, because look what kind of fucking person you are, man. You're a control freak, and you think that all my success is the result of you, and you're not giving me any credit, and there's just something off about you, dude. And, you know, I'm afraid, even though I love you, I don't want to be with you, And hopefully you're not a fucking murderer because you're saying I'd better change my mind back or we'll both be sorry because you'll kill me and you'll go to prison. Is that what he's saying? I don't know. I don't know. there you go. Thanks. That was another song of the day to check out. That song, by the way, is by a band called The Human League. The Human League. Man, that's a fun song. And we're going to segue hard into the news of the day, which is that the Biden campaign is hinting, Biden, not campaign, administration, they are hinting that they are going to relieve $10,000 of student loan debt from everyone making less than $125,000 per year. I don't know how they settled on the number, but me likey. You got to say, over the course of the last week, the market has been tanking, so that $10,000 that I just lost in the stock market, I'll get it right back, baby. Biden bucks.
Joe Biden, I'm President Joe Biden. This has been a great, perfect impression of me because I'm very old. And as your president, I think I heard that $10,000 is a formidable amount of money.
Maybe.
Yeah, it is a decent amount of money. And Bernie bucks would have been better. Bernie bucks might have given me 50K, you know what I'm saying? But I'll take the 10K from old man Biden. And then I guess I wonder if, because on the 31st, student loan payments are supposed to kick back in. They've been off for since COVID, I think in like May of 2020. There's been no student loan payments and no accrual of interest on those student loans, which for me, man, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, it's been fucking party time in the USA. That's a different song's melody, but it's been party time in the USA. Is that a song? Party time in the USA. Yeah, it's just party in the USA. Good old Miley.
Miley Cyrus.
Of course, Kids Bop covered it. Fucking Christ. yeah. I don't know. That's good money to me. I'll take what I can get. It says what they said was like they're leaning toward it, but the guy's got like a week and 2 days to make the announcement. So it seems like that's what it's going to be. You know, when they say, oh, we're leaning towards it, they're just making sure there's not going to be some crazy firestorm and make sure that they can handle it politically, and then it'll happen. I think that this is what it's going to be. And that 10,000 number has been floated around by Biden for a long time now. They're figuring out how to pull it off, and it seems like they'll pull it off. So, fucking great news. I'm all in. I'm all in on that. I need that. That will fix a little bit of my debt-to-income ratio, makes it easier to buy a house as someone with student loans. Right now, it's very hard to buy a house. You know, the mortgage rates for somebody with a higher debt-to-income ratio, and yes, student loans are included in the debt-to-income ratio. You can't file for bankruptcy off the student loan, right? That's hilarious, but they do affect you in every other way. So, you know, it's just this whole fucking system sucks, and I think, you know, the normies should get however much fucking money back they can get. We live in the richest country in the history of planet Earth, possibly in the universe, if this is the only place where there is intelligent life, or if this is the only place where intelligent life would form societies. Ah, ha, ha, ha. You think that all intelligent life forms these fucking wicked capitalist societies? Maybe not. Read some fucking sci-fi books, fucking non-nerd. That's the truth. Non-nerds are the losers. That's right. That's right. You heard it. You're a non-nerd, you're a fucking loser. Nerds are fucking cool. Nerds are cool. Being a nerd is in. They make more money than the rest of us. Fucking Elon Musk and fucking Jeff Bezos, the fucking two fucking space bros are out there fucking inseminating the world. And well, at least Elon is. I'm sure the other bald bro could do it if he wanted to. He'd be spreading those bald genes all around. It's not what I want for the future of mankind. I'm trying to give everybody long, luscious locks, but that's what Bezos wants to do, man. He wants you all to be bald. It's a future generation of baldies forevermore. Hold on, I'm having a sip of my non-sponsored beverage. This one has stevia as the flavoring, and the brand name rhymes with stevia. It's pretty good. It's cream soda. I'm enjoying it. Yeah. Mr. Trump also is in the news, isn't he? This whole Mar-a-Lago thing. I'm just going to give it to you straight, people. They ask, it's very simple. If you haven't heard, if you haven't followed it, you can get a nutshell version. It's very simple to follow and understand. He had a fucking hundreds of documents that he wasn't supposed to have that he took to Mar-a-Lago while he was president, which is already suspect, okay? But he was the president. He can have his documents where he's doing his work. He was doing his work at Mar-a-Lago because, you know, he wasn't a White House kind of president. As he wasn't an anything kind of president. He wasn't a kind of president, to be honest. So he kept them, and then he was subpoenaed to return them. So that's a legal request. He was subpoenaed to return them. He was given an amount of time to essentially make good on the request, a reasonable amount of time. He said, no, thank you. I'm going to keep this stuff. Go fuck yourselves. And then they sent the FBI to Mar-a-Lago to collect the documents, which they knew he had beyond a reasonable doubt. He did have them. They took them back. That's the end. Now he should and probably will be, so it seems, finally, the Teflon Don, be punished. Teflon Don Trump, be punished for what he did. It'll probably be a slap on the wrist. You know, it didn't return the documents. They're not going to be able to prove any motivation. They're not going to be able to prove that he was going to do something nefarious with the documents. And maybe he wasn't. You know, the nicest way you could look at this is that he's a douchebag, right? And he is. So that's the nicest way you could look at it. Trump's a douchebag. He was doing something douchey. Oh, I don't have to give anything back. These documents are mine. I was the president. And today I feel like keeping some secret documents, okay? What about nuclear? Oh, first of all, it's nuclear. Okay, get it right. It's nuclear documents. And they were about very explosive documents, folks. Let me tell you, like smashing the atoms. Smashing a couple of atoms is like a porno movie, am I right? He was just a douchebag, okay? And he kept the documents because he fucking wanted to, because I'm the boss, I'm the king, I'm the fucking president, I'm still the president, and I do what I want, and I did it as the president, and the president can do no wrong. It's a little bit of a flashback of the Richard Nixon attitude, although it's, you know, he's flashing back to it after Richard Nixon was already, you know, fucking had to resign over it, which is not exactly tactful or tactical. And I think that's the nicest way to look at it, is that he had documents, didn't want to give it back. Now, the worst way you could look at it would be if I was an evil genius Trump. That's right. Evil genius Trump. I love it. I want to give nuclear codes to everyone. I'm giving these nuclear codes to Iran. I'm giving nuclear codes to Putin. I'm giving nuclear codes to Kim Jong-un. And guess what, folks? I'm giving them to my dear old pals, China. But I don't think that's the case. I gotta be honest. I mean, if he had to save his skin for some reason, you know what I mean? Like, if he had to have something to barter to save his own ass, he only cares about himself. That much is true. But if he didn't need to do that, and he's all living high on the hog still in Mar-a-Lago, I think it's the former explanation. I think, well, it was pretty cool to have nuclear codes for a while, folks. I mean, if you could have nuclear codes in a box sitting in Melania's closet, you'd probably do it too, okay? That's right, yeah. There you have it. I didn't think there was any other news that I wanted to talk about, but I will pop open my little phone notes for the first time this episode. We keep it unscripted on Me Clicking Record. It's an unscripted podcast. Patreon, patreon.com/DaneCurley to support the show. Keep us going. Keep this hilarious Trump impression going for all of you, okay? And I don't know if I want to talk about revisiting The Sopranos just yet. We just finished season 5, though, and it has a pretty... Season 5 has one of the finales that is pretty iconic. You probably see memes of it a lot. It's when Tony sees the FBI running through the snow and makes a breakaway. And won't tell you what exactly happens or where exactly he is in case you haven't seen it and you do want to rewatch the show. But I'm going to talk about that in a future episode. So there's a teaser. There's a little cliffhanger for you all. Let's see how much time we've gone through so far. We're coming up on the 20-minute mark. Not enough. Not enough. I talked about Biden bucks, mentioned the market crashing. Yeah, I guess I should talk about fucking Sopranos. Damn, it's not a cliffhanger, folks. It was a cliffhanger, and now we've climbed up the cliff. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, you all know I was on The Sopranos. I was Ralphie's son, Justin Cifaretto, blah, blah, blah. Let me click a couple things off here so I could focus. I don't know. It's a fucking beautifully done show. The understanding of a man's ego that David Chase has and the writers of each episode, it's just spectacular self-awareness they must have for themselves to be at this level of explaining this character. And the season 5 also features this funny... Well, in season 4, Pie Oh My is Tony's horse. And that creates all of this drama around Tony and Ralphie, who played my father on the show. Joe Pantoliano played my father on the show. The character was my father on the show. And Tony ultimately has the biggest flare-up with Ralphie, not over any human beings that were being hurt by Ralphie, of which there were many, but because Tony's horse dies in a fire. And he believes that his, I don't know if you remember if he was a partner in ownering a co-owner of the horse or what the situation was. Maybe he sold the horse to Ralphie. I don't exactly remember. But Tony loved this horse and it died because the stable burnt down. So he was suspicious that Ralphie burnt the stable down because the horse would make more money off the insurance than off of races. Tony loved this horse. And throughout the show, Tony loves animals and can relate to animals more than anything else. The show opens with ducks in his pool and how much joy the ducks in his pool in his backyard bring him. And so then there's the horse. Anyway, he commissions a photo of himself and the horse Pie Oh My. And he is too emotionally weak to keep this thing. And he asks for it to be thrown away. And Paulie digs it out of the garbage, restores it, and changes Tony from modern day clothes to a revolutionary or perhaps French revolutionary general. Or maybe even Napoleonic general. I have another sip here. Well, he hangs it on his wall, Paulie does. And after so much time, Tony goes to Paulie's house. And there it is hanging, and Tony is furious. And at first he's just having like a yelling argument with Paulie. And Paulie's explaining everything with complete like candor, and he's talking to Tony straight, like, it's a beautiful painting. I know you told me to destroy it. I couldn't really go through with it. It's beautiful. I know it's worth a lot of money. I admit that. You're right. It's worth a lot of money. Because Tony's like, well, you just wanted it because you heard how much it cost, you know? No, but that is part of it. But also, it's really beautiful. I mean, look at, and I had an update. And Tony thought, like, why are you mocking? Are you mocking me by putting me in this in these clothes? You know? And he goes, no, no, no. Those are the clothes of a general. That's you, Tony. That's not just some general. I didn't paint over your face. That's you. That's how I see you. You're the general. And it's a beautiful moment of, you know, a guy lower in the operation who actually is demonstrating genuine respect for Tony, for his boss, for the leader of this organization, which to keep this organization together, you gotta fucking kill people. You gotta fight people. You gotta commit crimes. You gotta potentially go to prison. It's not an easy organization to keep together, and to be at the top of it is very difficult. Now, That doesn't mean I'm saying to be proud of gangsters or dons or mafia bosses. I'm not saying to be proud of them, but within that organization, certainly, and even on the outside looking in, certainly you could admit, we could all admit that it's not easy. It's a difficult thing to do. Now, I know there's some fucking Robert De Niro speech about, you know, what hard work is, and hard work is really going 9 to 5 all day. And yes, I agree. That's true. I think that's from A Bronx Tale. That's true. It is super hard. And you are a hero for working fucking 9 to 5 because it's fucking miserable. Okay? Let's face it. Let's face the misery of our lives. Let's be a little Buddhist about this. Life is suffering. And if you want the Christian perspective, that's fine. You know, they admit life is suffering in their own way because it's all about dying and going to heaven. Living a good enough life through the difficulty, through the suffering, that you will be able to gain entrance into a better place. Right? Even though it's really the meek shall inherit the earth. But anyway, you know, the Catholics made it heaven. So it's difficult, though, nevertheless, to run the mob. Do you sort of cheat at difficulties by make, do you make them easier by killing off the competition? Yes. By bribing people to get things to go your way, even at the detriment of other innocent people? Yes. That's cheating. It's not fair. It's not right. It's wrong. But nevertheless, there's a lot of competition. And there's a lot of competition willing to fucking kill you. And you're not the only mob in town. And so the story of The Sopranos is very interesting. One, Tony is a horribly flawed person. I mean, you feel so bad for him. And you should pity him. And you should probably not feel so much the way that Paulie Walnuts feels about him, and yet Paulie Walnuts does feel that way about him, and he should have appreciated that. As the viewer, you really should be pitying him and feeling sorry for him and seeing how he makes the wrong decision so many times when there are so many other options out there, so many bad, mean-spirited decisions. But what the show teaches you through his therapy with Dr. Melfi is that he is doing this to himself because he hates himself. Because he had bad upbringing, he had terrible parenting from his mother, and his father wasn't much better because he was a fucking mob boss, or mobster at least. Right? So, it's a story about spiritual reflection, and at least, if you're not into the whole spirituality thing, we can frame it as straight up psychological reflection. And that much is very well included in the show, every episode. And in this finale, and throughout season 5, there's a very worthwhile payoff for Tony. You can also explore the character of Christopher. This is a very dramatic season. Season 5 is for Christopher and Adriana. And you also have a scene where, maybe in the second to last episode, or the last episode of the season, Silvio, who's the consigliere, he's like the second in command, has to actually confront Tony and give him a negative opinion on behalf of the whole crew, but also it's personal, and share that with him as a constructive criticism. And that's got to be fucking hard, you know, to be able to grow the cojones to fucking talk to the boss of the mob, who's the infinitely powerful guy who has sovereignty. Sovereignty a mob boss has. The control over life and death, which is what they accused Charles Manson of. And he said, "You accuse me of the dispensation of life and death? I don't have that. Like, I can't control who kills who and who dies who." Because he was saying, like, you shouldn't put me away because someone else did the murders. I just said to do them. As if, you know, his power was meaningless or trivial. That by commanding others to commit murders, he wasn't guilty because he can't possibly have the power to do that. That's all spooky power. Nobody has spooky power, but of course there's nothing spooky about it. You can actually have power over people and authority other people and command them to do things and they will do them. And it will be your fault. And it will be their fault for listening as well. Of course. Anyway, this whole, you know, we just went 10 minutes on The Sopranos. I mean, rewatch it, man. Rewatch it so we can talk about it more. I won't do it every episode, but It's a beautiful show. I'm really, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm beating a dead horse here with saying how appreciative I am that I got to be on it now in hindsight. But as I rewatch it, I mean, what do I have, one season left or like two half seasons? I forget how they close out the show. But I'm excited to get back through it and talk to more people about it. So if you want to find me on Instagram at Dane Curley or write me on Patreon, of course, a nice little personal note. I would love to talk about The Sopranos with anybody. So I will talk to you all soon. Peace.
1, 2, 3. This is a podcast. Dane Noodles. This is a podcast. It's a podcast, Dane. This is a Noodles
cast.
And we like sex.